Jen. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
So it's been a while since I think you and I have chatted. It's usually via like LinkedIn, just a little direct message, but never actually speaking live. Maybe we did connect once, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but I think it's been some time. So it's been really great to have you on.
Thank you.
So I'm going to introduce you to the audience members. So Jen is an operations educator, at least for, I'd say, over about a year now. And you're quite involved with the HubSpot ecosystem. You also run this lovely RevOps curation newsletter, which I pay attention to, called Jen Bergeron's Weekly Newsletter. We'll get into the naming convention in a little bit. And then you also have this course, which you teach, and it's titled How to Document Your Business Processes. So again, welcome to the show. And I think this episode is going to be a little bit different because you're in and around writing content, targeting kind of the revenue operations persona. And so I'm curious, how did you get involved with revenue operations folks? Like, how did you start building content for us?
So the agency I worked for in my previous full-time role started as calling itself a marketing technology agency, but then when RevOps became popular, we realized that's what we were actually doing. So as we were rebranding to call ourselves a RevOps agency, that was also a similar time to me having more of an official operations role. So I went on a deep dive to learning about operations and RevOps. I found communities. I know we're gonna talk more about, but communities. And that was a new thing at the time, like having that Slack workspace type of community. And that was super helpful for learning common questions and answers. And because a lot of operations information I found is not really easy to find on Google. You usually find like supply chain things. I'm like, that's not super relevant to what I'm doing, building a small agency. So I joined these communities and realized some gap in the market for certain information that I wanted to help share about topics like documentation, things that are not talked about a lot, to try to help other people so they don't have to build from scratch and go through this whole trial and error and researching journey that I went through.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I'll walk you through my own journey. And by the way, feel free to turn the tables on me and ask questions at any point in time. But I was in sales starting in high school, right? Like I joined this Cutco knife thing and trying to sell Cutco knives to friends and family. Then I was a cold caller, an SDR, really, for Merrill Lynch. My cousin had worked at Merrill Lynch as a wealth manager. That was at university. And then after management consulting, I went into like headhunting, agency recruiting sales before going into business school and then flipping the script and taking a totally different career. And at the time, in 2013, when I first came into ops, I realized that there wasn't a whole lot of information. And I had to learn everything from scratch, and the role was very technical back then. So I had to learn from Stack Overflow, YouTube videos, asking folks how to do things. And that's how I learned all the systems side of the house and revenue operations. But nowadays, you know, 10 years later, there's a whole slew of information now, newsletters like yours, podcasts, like the one folks are listening to. And so it's a great time to get into revenue operations because you don't have to go reinvent the wheel. There's so much that's out there today. I'm curious, like, which specific communities you kind of dug into, and did you feel like you were an undercover cop kind of like patrolling the streets? I'm curious how you learned about us.
Yeah, there was a joke at Remoters that I was always like spying everywhere, like the word spying, but we made it kind of fun. But that's kind of what I do, spying and lurking in the Slack workspaces to spot, you know, like trends and common questions and answers I think I mentioned. I do remember specifically joining Pavilion. That might have been one of the first ones I joined. And because I'm an introvert, I need to have like a job when I join any kind of like networking in-person event, especially. So I volunteered to be associate chapter leader when those events were returning. But there was also like Wizard of Ops and MoPros and, you know, RevOps Co-op. And there's so many that were all coming around the same time, or at least I discovered them all around the same time. And it's just great to see so many operations community, Operations Nation. I'll give them a shout out as well. So many great communities.
Yeah, that makes sense. I joined Pavilion back in 2020 at the behest of my former superior, a gentleman named Justin Welsh. Folks who are on LinkedIn or Twitter may know who he is. He's kind of like a titan. He's a titan now for content. But at the time, he was the SVP of sales at the company I was working at. And it was me, him, Kevin Dorsey. We were all on the same sales leadership team, and we were all posting on LinkedIn together. And when the pandemic hit, like a year later, and all of a sudden we were like some of the few people who are riding a wave of this trend of folks consuming content, not on Instagram, not on Facebook, but on LinkedIn. People had shifted their social media habits to like LinkedIn, and I thought it was really interesting, and we just happened to be at the right place at the right time. But Pavilion has been awesome. Shout out to RevOps Co-op as well. Matt Volm, who's the owner, has been a wonderful partner for me, at least for a lot of different education. Yeah, so this is really interesting. And then MoPro's put on their first live event this year. Shout out to Mike Rizzo on Mopsapalooza. That was fantastic. I'm curious about your course. Tell me about like who takes your course. What have you learned from the students? Because, you know, as a facilitator, you're teaching folks, but at the end of the day, you're also learning the other way around from your students. I'm curious what you've learned.
Sure. So my course, my current courses on my own are for process documentation. I have a whole full suite of products about documentation, but the main one is the How to Document Your Business Processes live course that has four sessions. I did a live course for us to get faster feedback for what you mentioned about what did I learn? Things about improving, like a lot of the sessions, I think I made them all longer. I think they're all 90 minutes instead of 60 minutes now because people wanted more time to do like their individual work. I have like an individual work time during the session and then also a breakout. And people wanted more time talking to each other. So that was a big lesson about giving people more time to do work on their own and work with each other for that collaboration. And then I also learned like which topics of that course were most popular. So I spun those off into one session workshops about writing documentation and setting up your documentation systems. That was an interesting learning because some people might only be interested in that one topic and they might be hesitant to take like a whole four session course. And I also learned that some people just like using the workbook and maybe not taking a course. So I made the workbooks available on their own. And after doing all this iterating from all this feedback and all this learning, I made an on-demand course recently. I think I released that last month for people who may not be in the same time zone. I know time zones were always an issue. I'm always switching up the time of the class based on all the surveys and all the feedback that I run. But I was wondering, actually, your class, have you run into time zone issues, and what other things have you learned about classes in general?
Yeah, good question. So I run, for the listeners out there, I run two courses, now four. The first two courses are live, and the third and fourth course are on demand. So the first two courses are Unleashing ROI, which is RevOps Impact, the ROI. I think a lot of folks, it goes over their head because I say it so glibly. But I believe that revenue operations does return an investment to businesses, and hence the pun. That has been going on for about six quarters now with the RevOps Co-op. I think we crossed 100 students last year. Then we run the Sales Ops Masterclass. We just crossed 65 students. The cohort just ended today, actually, in December. And so that course is a 12-week, six-session deep dive into sales operations. The ROI course is 10 weeks, 10 hours of content. And you know, sales ops is just one of those hours of the 10. So I go through a lot of material really fast. It's for those teams of one or aspiring leaders in RevOps that want to get a 10,000 foot view of revenue operations and then be able to work with a lot of their ICs. And then the sales ops person is more for the IC who's trying to execute. The students have been all over the world, to be quite frank. So in the beginning, it was mostly North America, Canada, USA. But then I run the course around 8, 9 a.m. And the folks who can make it are going to be on the East Coast of USA, the West Coast of USA. And then this quarter, I actually had quite a few people from like Asian time zones. So one person from the Philippines, one person from India. That was really rough on them. And I apologize to those students because it was late at night for them, like nearing midnight. The European students can easily take it because it's at the end of their day. So I haven't yet played with the format around interspersing and changing the time zones, changing, you know, an EMEA friendly to an APAC friendly. I think that would be a good rotation. The problem is I just don't have that many students to be able to justify, you know, my facilitation on a live basis. But on an on-demand basis, it absolutely can work because folks can just play it at their own leisure at home. And so I think there's an evolving format that could work. I think at some point I'll probably just have a deep fake version, AI version of me, and folks will interact with that virtual avatar. And then I'll be everywhere, right? I can at least
all the time.
Service all sorts of different formats.
Yes, by my own students for my own businesses course, they've been mostly like East Coast in Europe, and I know both of us are on the West Coast, so the mornings have been most popular. The boot camp I run for HubSpot has more of an international audience, so people were joining like in the middle of the night in their time zone. I'm like, wow, that's dedication.
That's really cool. So, you know, as a salesperson, I'm always thinking through, you know, where is the budget? Where does it come from? And I found that it comes from learning and development budgets, corporate L&D. So it's kind of like those HSA, those FSA emails that you get at the end of the year. Like, hey, go buy some glasses with your FSA money. It's December. You gotta spend it before you lose it. It's kind of the same thing. It's like, look, your calendar fiscal is coming up. If you haven't spent your stipend, go spend it on this course. And that's kind of the play that we've been running. But then there's a second audience where if you lower the price enough or create installment payments, you can get personal spending, right? So like I, for example, pay for several memberships myself, and I try to allocate it to a certain percentage of my top line income. And this is an investment for me. And whether if I can get my company to pay for it, great. If I can't, then I'll pay for it out of pocket. And I find that the education for certain roles like revenue operations, you're just not going to get it from your workplace. Because most of the time, if you're a revenue operator, you're the only person probably doing revenue operations. So who are you going to learn from?
So very true, very true. And I'm interested to see I've only been running the course for about a year, so I'm interested to see like what happens in January. Are like more people going to sign up because the budgets got refreshed, or it's been a mix of personal and corporate spending. So that'll be interesting to see.
Absolutely. Have you been tagged to, so the course, the students who take your course, what percentage of them are in revenue operations?
I do not have a percentage, but I would, off the top of my head, I would say 30%, because a lot of my network is in revenue operations or marketing operations. And otherwise, there are a lot of agency people, because again, that's what was my network from being in agencies. And then some founders or solopreneurs who are looking to expand their team and delegate more of their work, so they need to document.
So if you think about, I think about like a weight loss industry, for example, they're very good at this. They'll show, you know, the before photo and the after photo. I don't expect folks in RevOps to show their tech stack before and after, their process stack before and after. But, you know, what's that journey? Like, here's where I am before I took your course. And then, hey, a couple of weeks, a couple of months pass by after taking your course. What's the after? I'm curious what that snapshot has looked like.
I would say before, people are really stressed because they have way too much work to do. They have to remember all the information about the 10,000 things they're doing every day. If they are either a founder or a revenue operations or any kind of operations team of one, they're probably doing different things every day. They may only do those things once a month. It's pretty hard to remember how to do things without either recreating the wheel or having errors or just being stressed all the time. So documentation, that would be the before documentation state. The after documentation state would be less stress because they can delegate and spread out their work. Less stress because they don't have to remember everything. They can be like, oh, I can just refer to that document. I don't have to worry about missing a step. They can learn how to improve those processes now that they can see them, that they are documented, so they can do their job better and hopefully get promoted. And there's probably 10,000 other things, but we're a limited time here, so I'm going to stop there.
Yeah. So I think about job aids or standard operating procedures, SOPs. There's also like rules of engagement. There's like various naming conventions for documentation for revenue operations. And so, for example, a sales rep will ask me, hey, Jeff, I'm curious how to manage this opportunity in Salesforce. Great. Let me point you to our wiki or on our Confluence page or a Notion page. Here's a Loom video. So there's so many different ways to record the information. I'm curious what were some of the most common tools that some of your students have shared for how they document their processes.
It's been interesting because so many people use different tools, and I kind of encourage that because it depends on the tools you're already using for like what's going to integrate into what the team is already using as like their daily home base tool, so they don't have to learn a tool in addition to a new habit, because those two things together is like twice as much adoption work to try to get people to do it. But some of the things people have been using, I've noticed have been like Notion and ClickUp documents for the agencies and other companies who use ClickUp already. And the HubSpot knowledge base is what I used at my past agency because we were a HubSpot agency, so that made sense for us. Like our people were in HubSpot every day. Why don't we put the documentation where the people are already working?
Yeah, so Justin, who I just mentioned earlier, I think he ran everything off of Kajabi. I'm not sure if he's still doing that. And then my material for the RevOps co-op course, that is actually in HubSpot knowledge base as well. So it's in the KB. But I know a couple of other folks have run their courses on Udemy. So there's a whole number, a host, a whole different host of tools that are out there. I'm curious your take on AI, right? So I've just been playing with this tool that Sean Lane sent over to me. It's called ChatBase, and I've just been feeding it all of my newsletter articles, and it's starting to train to, answer a bunch of questions. I'll share it later. It's a chat bot. You can ask it about a bunch of things like, "Hey, what is RevOps? How do you design a comp plan?" And it's spitting out some plausible information. I'm curious if you've started to play with some of those, those generative AI tools.
I haven't done much yet, but I'm keeping an eye on it. But I've heard in my classes that people have used it for like editing their documentation. Like they'll do a first kind of brain dump and they'll use AI to clean it up. And then after people have documentation, they mentioned making a chatbot that pulls from that documentation that answer people's questions. So they're not answering questions all day. They have the bot to do that for them. So that's freed up their time.
That's super cool. I think of that kind of an Alexa or a Siri side companion. It's basically Fancy Clippy. I don't know if you remember Clippy from the 90s or early 2000s. And it's just like super snippy Clippy, right?
Yes.
Have you thought about building a community, right? So you have this course, you have alumni, folks want to stay involved. Like how are you thinking about the aspect of community? You talked about you were lurking and learning in a community. But you've got your own asset here now with this course. I'm curious how you think about it, building a community.
So I have a Slack workspace for alumni. I wouldn't call it community because it's like so few people right now that have signed up for it. But I do share like my newsletter and then like the pieces of my newsletter that are re specifically related to documentation. I'll like put those out, schedule those out like one a day so people get those resources. I ask people questions and try to get feedback on the course. Throughout the year, there's a cadence of like 1, 3, 6, 12 months after they take the class. And some of that is done in Slack and some of it's done in email. But I haven't had quite enough people to really get a community going yet, though that's super interesting. And I think I may have noticed that you're starting to get conglomerate all of your not assets, I don't like that word, but your educational content on Substack. Is that moving towards a community for you?
Yeah, so the idea is to create a flywheel, and the flywheel is meant to have these assets or these pieces of content. I like to use the word assets. I think of the media industry, for example. So it's sort of a small, tiny media business that I run. The newsletter goes out on a weekly basis. That's 2 hours of writing on Sundays. The podcasts I'm recording, maybe two interviews per week on the late night or like late in the week with folks. So that's about 2 hours as well. So I try to keep all the side businesses to only like 5 or 6 hours a week of work, and just push to some hours that are friendly for me to be able to balance a full-time job. And so the whole idea is to have the newsletter point to the co to the podcast, then the podcast pointing back to the newsletter, and then having the opportunity to invite folks to want to get engaged with other ways I can support them, whether that's coaching or a course, and then I'm thinking next year live events. So the Hero Hour is something that I'm launching. The head of RevOps is kind of what Hero stands for, and then maybe playing with the idea of small mini workshops, like you mentioned earlier. So there's like one piece in my courses that folks gravitate towards, and they want to see like a how-to. Okay, great. We could probably do a breakout, 2 to 3 hour session for just going deep on one specific topic. It's like a lab. And then hopefully folks can show results after that. So that's the plan, at least, is to just continue creating content. It's a labor of love for me. And I think folks are somewhat willing to sponsor or pay for it. And it gives me confidence that it is the type of material that people want to have out there. And if it's not me who builds it, it'll be somebody else. So hope that there are some gaps in the market that hopefully will be filled. That's at least my thinking.
Yes, you answered some of my questions about your process for creating your newsletter. And do you get writer's block when you're trying to write these amazing super in-depth essays every week.
Oh, totally. So I've just been doing, I've been feeding this algorithm in the last 12 weeks of newsletters. I've been feeding it in. It's about 12,000 characters per article. And if I strip out, you know, obviously the fluff where I'm trying to like market some sort of offer to somebody, if I strip out the offers and the sponsors, that's probably 11,000 characters, 1,000 characters. The average word, I think, is like 5 or 6 characters. So you can do the math, how many words. It's roughly about 2,000 words, 1,900 words. So it is a pretty big essay that I'm writing, as opposed to like a LinkedIn post, which has taken me only 5 minutes to create. So the idea is I get blocked. So I'll often reference my LinkedIn post and go back to, is this post a good candidate for blowing up to, you know, 1,000 words or more? And, or is it a topic that someone's asking about? Or is it something that I'm currently working on in my full-time job that I'm just curious about and I need to go deeper? So there's some self-serving to some of the articles I write because I happen to be working on that one topic at work as well. And so to be able to come in with a sharp edge, I start deeply thinking about it writing on Sunday. And that way, when I roll into work on Monday, I already have like at least a couple of perspectives to think through.
Thank you for sharing. I think you brought up another topic of looking at your LinkedIn post. Do you ever write a LinkedIn post in advance to like test out, are people going to want a whole article on this topic?
No, I never write my LinkedIn post with intention, to be quite frank. It's, all right, I'm making coffee in the morning. My daughter's getting ready for school. I have about maybe 5 minutes where she's like not yelling and screaming at me to go get something. And in that quiet moment when I'm drinking my coffee, I just start hammering out a post really quick on Google Keep. And then I start editing it maybe a minute later and say, okay, I'm not going to spell check it, but I just throw it out there. So you'll see a lot of my posts have like grammatical errors or spelling errors. It's because I'm just trying to ship it super fast. And then maybe about 20 minutes will go by. I'll go back into LinkedIn. I'm like, oh my God, I need to edit this thing. So the folks who actually see the post in the first 20 minutes, you'll see it's like real raw. So now I just edit it. I try not to overthink it, and I preach that. If you're going to try to post on LinkedIn, don't overkill it. Just spend 5 minutes or less. Because like, I think it can be a major time suck for people to just endlessly spend time on LinkedIn. But by the way, this is the end of the segment. I really wanted to ask you, if you were to go back in your career, take a time machine and visit young Jen, what would you give advice to your younger self?
Oh, it depends on how much younger. We'll say maybe the first career of so many careers, but don't expect to be in the same career your whole life, though that's what, you know, everyone tells you in high school and college, like you have to choose one thing to do for the next 40 years, but that's not true. So don't put so much pressure on yourself to advance in that first career right away, super fast. Like, don't feel ashamed about what seems like maybe a lack of progress or a lack of climbing the ladder, and enjoy the journey more. It's just not going to look how you expect it, and that's okay.
I agree. I've had 3 careers in my life, so I think that's sage advice. Appreciate you sharing. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on the podcast, Jeff.